So, that in mind, join me in Ecclesiastes chapter 5. You'll find it in the Old Testament. If you find Psalms, then go to the right, then you'll go to Proverbs, and the next book after that will be titled Ecclesiastes. And you find in chapter 1 of Ecclesiastes, just by way of introduction, we have, beginning in verse 1, the words of the preacher. It means a little different than we maybe would apply it in common English language. It speaks of the searcher, the debater, one who gathers together, but yet he's still searching. And we know this to be true because we're told who this preacher is. It is the son of David. We know it to be Solomon. And he's in Jerusalem. Now we know a little bit about Solomon. Solomon was blessed by God. God placed him to rule over God's chosen people. And he gives Solomon wisdom beyond any other man. He even give him wealth and position in a sense of favor. It was a phenomenal life. But he also told Solomon, now listen, just make sure I keep your eyes on me. And don't get distracted by all these other things. Understand what your purpose is, so to speak. As you're searching things out, make sure you keep your eyes up. And as we've looked at, the key verse or theme to understanding this book is to know that Solomon lost perspective. He came away from his primary purpose, and he was distracted by secondary things. And he started looking at everything under the sun. He started seeing everything from this limited vantage point, to where everything was, as we've called it, a vanishing point, disappearing when he took hold of it. He had wealth, and that should have made him happy, and it didn't. He had other things, and he gained, and he had all these liberties and freedoms because of the money. It didn't have the restriction. He could party because he could afford it. He could bring in musicians because he could pay them or whatever. He could just make them do it. He had all that, but guess what happens? In the quest to find satisfaction of his soul and embracing these things, they were vanishing away. Everything under the sun, you see there in chapter 1, verse 2, had become vanity. He realized if that's the primary purpose, it's emptiness. It ultimately is ineffective. It's meaningless. It's not to say that it's of no value. It just cannot produce what I'm looking for. And if we're looking for those things to produce within us or generate a sense of contentness, you're going to know. You know already if you've wandered for very long, it just doesn't provide. It doesn't get the job done. So now, as we've read through Ecclesiastes there from chapter 1, we've been journeying through, looking at Solomon's conclusion, his summary statements, his proverbial observations in regards to this limited vision under the sun. We find ourselves now in chapter 5, beginning in verse 1. He concludes and makes this statement: walk prudently when you go to the house of God, and draw near to hear rather than to give the sacrifice of fools, for they do not know what they do, that they do evil. Walk prudently. Be aware of where you're going. And he says, when you go to the house of God, when you approach God, think about what you're doing. That's his summary. I mean, remember, he was like this. And now he's this thing, you know, in light of everything, don't take God lightly. Don't put God as a common thing. Matter of fact, when you approach God, draw near to hear. Let's pray. God, may we be a people who are receptive to your word. That as we would learn from your word, as we would learn what you have taught us and the truths that you've revealed in regards to possessions and position and power and all the things that are in our world, this very morning as we've come into this building, a building that represents you to some measure, a gathering place that we can turn to our God, may we be people who gather to hear. Not just doing things, not just about things, but people that have gathered to gain insight and understanding from the living God. Speak to our hearts today. I pray, God, that as I would be a vessel that you would be poured into and flow from, I pray that I not hinder. I pray that I speak your words of life and your words of hope. The Holy Spirit, you would correct us, comfort us, direct us, strengthen us, encourage us, lead us according to your purposes for your good pleasure in your sweet name, Jesus. Amen. Weird, just I pray and then he sends a text. That's bizarre. But all right. So silence your cell phones. There we go. Got it done, right? So if you need them on vibrate, that's what you got to do. So here we got Solomon. The vessel that God chose to speak through is relevant because you will generally listen to somebody who has some reputation in regards to your interest. Will you go listen to a guy teaching you how to run your business who is like a bum on the street, never done anything but live in a cardboard box? You won't, because he doesn't have a reputation relevant to your point of interest. So what about Solomon? See, he has a reputation, a life experience. He has a voice that carries a little bit of conviction, if you would, because he's been through it. He's had more wealth than anybody proportionally in all of human history. He's had more wisdom than any leader, I believe, in any day, because God gave it to him. And yet he's making these summaries, these assessments. What I'd like to do is as we go through this, I'm going to break it up into two or three sections today. And we're going to go through the entire chapter. I'm going to just offer a limited comment. I encourage you to read through it throughout the week. Be kind of pondering, chewing on it, musing on this passage, this chapter. But as we go through it, I think it's also important to also stay within the simplicity so that we can see things more clearly. Does that help? Sometimes I know I'm guilty of this. I can sometimes make things so complex that it's hard to get a good handle on what the simple reality is. So let's just roll through it, and then I'm going to offer a little bit on it. So we're beginning there in verse 2, because he's already made this first statement, speaking of, you know, don't give sacrifice the sacrifice of fools, so they do not know that they do evil. He'll give us a little more insight into what his thought is in verse 2. Do not be rash with your mouth, and let not your heart utter anything hastily before God. For God is in heaven, and you on earth. Therefore, let your words be few. For a dream comes through much activity, and a fool's voice is known by his many words. When you make a vow to God, do not delay to pay it, for he has no pleasure in fools. Pay what you have vowed. Better not to vow than to vow and not pay. Verse 6, do not let your mouth cause your flesh to sin, nor say before the messenger of God that it was an error. Why should God be angry at your excuse and destroy the works of your hands? For in the multitude of dreams and many words, there is also vanity, but fear God. So let's kind of go through this real quickly. Do not be rash with your mouth, and let not your heart utter anything hastily before God. So in other words, think about what you're saying. I think there's a lot of application for this in our lives. We can be stirred by emotion. We can be stirred by circumstances. We can be caused to come to bending our knees because of incarceration. And we can say, okay, God, here's the deal. I will commit my life to you. You get me out of this. You provide that. You do this. I will. Have you thought about a vow in a sense? See, vows are not a problem, honestly. I think it's relevant to understand the motive behind the vow. Isn't a vow to some degree making a deal with God? Okay, here's the deal, God. So I'm in this situation, and here's the scenario. So here's what I'll do. It's kind of backwards, really, don't you think? I mean, living on this side of the cross where everything's been accomplished, how can we say, all right, here's the thing. You haven't done enough for me personally, so I'm going to sweeten the pot. I'm going to stir you to do just a little bit more. Here's what I'll do for you. Doesn't that sound weird? Isn't it sound like the sacrifice, the offering of a fool? One who would say, okay, so here's the thing. Now, don't throw away the thought, the concept of making a commitment, a vow to God. Just question to some degree, why am I doing this? Am I doing it because he's been insufficient in the past? Therefore, I need to kind of awaken him? Or maybe I'm doing it because I don't trust myself. Therefore, I have to tell God and let it bounce out of my mouth and reverberate through my ears to remind me of what I need to be doing. And so in my own reasoning, I come up with some plan. And I just suggest it's better just to not even go there. Just don't be rash with your mouth. Don't let your heart utter anything hastily. He is in heaven and you are here on earth. So let your words be few and stand in awe of him, as the song goes. I stand in awe of you. I'll let my words be few. And it's important to see just what's said there. It's not that we should be afraid of God, like I said the wrong thing. It's just think about what we're saying to him, what we offer. If you make a vow, don't delay to pay it. How many times have we as people made a vow? Maybe there's a stirring, a genuine work of the Spirit in our hearts. And we make this deal. God, from now on, I'm going to help in Sunday school. After listening to that and I seeing those things, you know, what's happening in India, I'm going to support missions. I'm going to do it, God. That's okay. That's a good thing. If it's a stirring of the Spirit to where you then are saying, you know what, God, I'm tired of living this kind of setback life. I'm going to step out. If that's the case, do it. But count the cost. You know, if I say, all right, I'm going to study the Word of God. I'm going to be a man, a woman, a person who will live according to the truth. And you commit to a Bible study, or you want to come to midweek because there's a need for you to grow in an understanding of the Scripture, it will cost you something. You will have to give up something. Your job may require different things. You may have to adjust your schedule. Your schedule at home, you may not feel like doing something. But guess what it says here? Don't delay to pay it. Realize it's okay. I mean, honestly, I found some of the most difficult days is when I made a sacrifice, a commitment. It's like, God, I'm going to do this. And then I start on it and I go, what did I sign up for? What was I thinking? Assuming that I was. And I realize, you know what? It doesn't matter. I made the commitment and I know it's what I need to do. And so I have to work through a certain amount of habit and behavior and opportunity and recreation and tiredness and mental instability. And I have to say, this is what before the God of heavens, I know I need to do. And I know he's called me to do. Therefore, as Paul said, I discipline my body and I bring it into subjection. Lest after having preached to others, told others how to do stuff, I find myself off course, disqualified. Make the vow. He has no pleasure in fools. If you make that, just do it. Better to not vow than to vow and not do it. Because you don't want to get into a routine. God is not surprised. But I don't want to get into a routine where I regularly make commitments and consistently drop them. Because it creates a behavior, a pattern in my life. And God knows it's not healthy. It's not helpful for me. Do not let your mouth cause your flesh to sin, nor say before the messenger of God, it was an error. It's kind of like when you come in and you meet an usher, or kind of you see the picture. Those it would be right there, maybe someone in the synagogue or in the temple, okay, we'll call it in the church for us. And you see him, and like, oh, yeah, I know I committed to that, but I made a mistake. See, that's what's being said. Oh, no, my bad. I didn't mean to actually say I would do it every time. What I meant to say is I'll randomly appear as it feels good. Well, no, that came out wrong. What I meant to say is, so you see, don't say it was a mistake. Just think about what you're saying, and as you make this commitment, just do it so that God doesn't have to come along and rearrange the work of your hands to get your attention. He's not a destroyer going, all right, you made a commitment, you didn't follow through, I'm bringing death and disaster upon your world. That is not the God you serve. God says, listen, you're devoting to things that are going to be destructive to you, so I will sometimes have to disturb those. Have you ever been there? Where you allow your life to get too busy, and he just stirs it up, and it just gets really complicated. And then you have to back up and go, what is going on? And when you back up and say, what is going on? You realize, oh man, I just want to stay true to where God would have me to go. And you discard a few things, and you sort out a few things, and you hold on to a few things according to his design. It says in the multitude of dreams are many words. You know, this dreams being just those thoughts that are kind of erratic and kind of around. And, you know, he's referring to things that are not constrained by reason. It's kind of spontaneous. And speaking of many words, you know, just kind of let them be few and just think through what you're saying to God. Now, let's look in the next section. We're just going to look in these next few verses, 8 and 9, actually, to see another thing that there's an observation. There's a statement in regards to life coming from an expert, I would suggest. If you see the oppression of the poor and the violent perversion of justice and righteousness in a province, do not marvel at the matter, For high official watches over high official, and higher officials are over them. Moreover, the profit of the land is for all. Even the king is served from the field. So here is the king, and he's looking, and he goes, you know, I know life, and I know what's going on. What do you think happened in the outer regions of his kingdom? There's not the protective forces, so to speak. The people on the outer edge were exposed to some measure, I would suggest, even of corruption. But you know, that guy out there in Podunk County is accountable to a governor. And a governor is accountable to a president. Do you see, even in their structure, different words than ours, but similar. He said, listen, there's higher official over higher official. Even in the whole realm of the kingdom, the king is provided by the things of the land. There's this continuity, a certain designed unity, although not always perfected. What's even more important, there is high official over higher official, but there's also a divine court in our world that will rule over a supreme court. There is a greater King of Kings who will and is reigning, even though people question. We wonder because of our lack of wisdom and our incapacity, inability to see things from eternity. We wonder what's going on in our world. I am confident in this. I find my hope in this, quite honestly. God's going to sort it all out. And he will, for me and for everyone, hold us accountable. And no matter what the position, no matter how high or low, So do you find that encouraging, seriously? When you get the news, when you see what's going on in the world. See, many people, they don't understand this dilemma, this almost contradiction relationally. Here's the God who says, listen, when you come to me, be real. Don't be faking it. Because if you're faking it, I'm going to stir things up in your life. And they would say, well, how could that be? You don't even run the governments in this world. Look at the atrocities. Look at the things that happen. There's no way you can tell me that you're reigning over the world when I see such horrible things happening. Isn't that true? Isn't that a logic that the world kind of like bounces around and we're exposed to? But I hold on to this reality. There will come a day when every knee will bow and every tongue confess that Jesus Christ is Lord. There will come a day when everything will be sorted out. Sooner, hopefully, but that's my hope. It's not just a wishful thinking. It's a documented reality that the living God reigns over this world. He's allowed the prince of darkness to have his little moments, and it's going to continue till he determines far enough. But at that point, everyone, we're told, will be held accountable. Even Christians. We're going to give an account for what we've done with what he's given us. What we've done in regards to our vocation, in regards to our calling, so to speak, in regards to serving and the gifting, it's really important. High official, the highest official, he rules over it all. Let's continue on now in verse 10 through 17. He's observing and he's making these statements and he's realizing this is the time he lived in, and you and I will see clearly it's the time that we live in. In verse 10, it says, he who loves silver will not be satisfied with silver. Nor he who loves abundance with increase, this also is vanity. It's emptiness. It's meaningless. Chasing the wind. Verse 11, when goods increase, they increase who eat them. So that what profit have the owners except to see them with their eyes? The sleep of a laboring man is sweet, whether he eats little or much. But the abundance of the rich will not permit him to sleep. There is a severe evil which I have seen under the sun. Riches kept for their owner to his hurt, but those riches perish through misfortune. When he begot a son, there was nothing in his hand. As he came from his mother's womb, naked shall he return to go as he came, and he shall take nothing from his labor, which he may carry away in his hand. Verse 16, this also is a severe evil. Just exactly as he came, so shall he go. And what profit has he who has labored for the wind? All his days he also eats darkness, and he has much sorrow, sickness, and anger. He is not a good motivational speaker for the vocations, all right? Can you imagine having him show up to do some build-up for the corporation? All right, Solomon's going to speak. A man of wealth, a man of strength, a man of ability. He has done it. Let's hear what he has to say. All right, here's the thing, people. stick your head in the sand, it's better. That's all. That's kind of what he's surmising and coming up to. Let's look at this just a little bit, just to see the truth in it. If you love silver, you're not going to be satisfied with it. We know that to be true. It's a proven fact, if you would, in the sense of our own lives attest to it. What about abundance? It's really interesting as we, as individuals grow older, when we're young, we have an assessment. This is what it'll take to carry me through when I get older. But I've seen this consistently. It's not a miscalculation, I don't believe. When we're younger, we say, well, if I have this much, when I get to this age, I'll be okay. But midway through, we bump it up. And then further along, we bump it up further. And to the point where it's like there's never enough. And those who have millions treat themselves and carry on as if they have nothing. And they talk as if, oh man, I don't know if we're going to make it. Because abundance doesn't satisfy. And the more we have, the more we want. And then we're still stuck in this bizarre struggle. And when goods increase, he says in verse 11, they increase to who eat them. So you start a business. I had a guy in Boise tell me this. It was just a personal example. So he starts this company doing groundwork, excavation work. And then it shifted into a little paving and dirt work, basically. And as the company grew, he was like, wow, sweet. So he expanded and got a full crew. And then he went to another crew, bought another piece of equipment, a big excavator, which is an expensive item. And then you got to have a trailer and a truck. And because you now have expanded, you need another dump truck. And then he went to a third crew. And at the end of 2 years or so, he looked back and said, you know what? All I've done is increase in stuff. I have no more. Because the more I increased, the more I had to manage. The more I had to dole out. The more work it took. And so what this guy did, he just kind of run the numbers. Like, I was taking home more when there was just four of us. So he sold the equipment, went back to just the four of them. But you see the whole thing that Solomon says? Man, I got thousands upon thousands of servants. And what that means is I got to feed them. Because he has the wrong perspective. Instead of understanding God was working through him to provide for people, he's like, what did I gain out of this whole thing? Great, I got more, but I got more work at the same time. He says here, the sleep of a laboring man is sweet, whether he eats little or much. I know this to be true. I haven't been on the other side, the wealthy dude. But I know, like for example, when I just work a long day, or I look back in the truck shop especially, or even working on these two buildings, there's days that are long by hours and long by demand. And they're physically draining. And you work with your hands and you sweat, and many of you guys know what I'm talking about. Your job just drains your muscles. And when you eat just a little bit of dinner, whatever it is, and you lay down, you don't have to think about going to sleep. You just, once you lay down, you hope you got all your business taken care of before you lay down, because you ain't getting up. Because you are tired and you're going to sleep good. It's just a fact. And yet the guy who doesn't, because he's managing his money and he's moving his funds and he's juggling all this stuff, and then he lays down according to what the text says, the abundance of the rich will not permit him to sleep. He wakes up in the middle of the night, oh my goodness. I forgot to call that in. Oh my God, I hope no one takes that. And see what's happening? What's supposed to be able to give him satisfaction and peace isn't providing any serenity at all. Instead, he's like in greater turmoil. Another severe evil that Solomon observed is that when people do work hard and they do what they can do and they do their part, but sometimes misfortunes, it says, or bad business or bad breaks, as we may call them, they just lose everything. There's nothing cut and dried to say, okay, if you do this, you will always have excess. God will always provide. And it's not to in any way demotivate or deflate us. It's just a fact. Have you ever heard of the thing of the thought of security? See, I talk to people who are in this area, and they have this kind of a career of a military thing, you know? And so they have security. But there is something we want to kind of back up, you know, this silly hope in false security sometimes. What's that one term that I heard it recently, about a year ago? Force reduction? What was that term? Where people are now out of the military, but they went in because it was security? I draw off this one because it's such a vivid picture to me. Anybody remember Enron? Anybody? Raise your hand if you know what Enron is. Okay, Enron. Okay, let's just put it this way. Texas version of Micron. Okay? Only bigger. Massive buildings. Great. The job of all jobs. It's like, whoa, I've got security. Until you showed up at this massive high-rise in downtown wherever Texas, and your key didn't fit because they shut down. They went broke just like that. Shut down. Nothing offered. No severance. Nothing. Done. Because bad business. Those people going in were working hard. They were doing their jobs. Somebody else, probably up a little higher, was doing a job too, but a different kind. You see what I'm saying? There's this kind of this false hope sometimes that this will do it. It's not to in any way say we shouldn't be good stewards. It's where we're placing our hope, where we're putting our, like, recognizing what is my purpose. He says he sees this severe evil in the sense of you work hard and then ultimately you don't take anything with you. Because he speaks of, you know, he doesn't carry it away in his hand in verse 15. Now, you can transfer from one kingdom to another. There is a conversion rate that God has established. We can look at that at some other time. But basically, the work you do here and you invest, as Jesus talked about, you know, storing up for treasures in the kingdom to come, that what you do here, investing into his purposes, he does put that over into this much better fund, so to speak. In other words, it carries into heaven. So there's things you can do, but it's not what he's talking about here is you don't hold on to the stuff. You don't take your bank statement to the grave. You may, but it's just paper, and the worms are going to eat it along with your flesh. So it's no big deal. Solomon sees that. It's just like if that's the purpose in life, it's severe evil. All his days are darkness. He has more sorrow, sickness, and anger. The one who decides this will do it, all these things will provide for me. This will carry me. This will keep me. This is what I need to be. This is what you'll end up, he says. Sorrowful, disillusioned, dark, and in sickness and anger. It's your guts eating you inside out kind of a thing. Because you just can't let go of all you've done and what's been done to you and yet having nothing. One more observation. We'll settle in on this. Here is what I've seen. It's good and fitting for one to eat and drink and enjoy the good of all his labor in which he toils under the sun all the days of his life, which God gives him, for it is his heritage. As for every man to whom God has given riches and wealth and given power to eat of it, to receive his heritage and rejoice in his labor, this is the gift of God. For he will not dwell unduly on the days of his life because God keeps him busy with the joy of his heart. Let's take that apart because there's really some important things in here. It says in verses 18 and 19, basically, enjoy what you have. Enjoy what you have. First aspect, first element is you got to know where it came from. Because it says here that what you have, and these things that have been in a sense entrusted to you, they're a gift from God. Now, I know the male brain does not agree with that because it's demotivating. The fact is, who we are, we have what we have because of what God has given us. The working that I do, is I work with what he gave me. Without him, what do you start with? Nothing, you know, and that's a really hard thing to embrace as a guy. Because you know what? I worked hard and I trained and I put in all long days, you know, sanding trucks and learning how to prep and learning how to paint. And it took a lot on my part to do those things. And when I learned how to paint semis and I was getting good at it and I got a reputation, it was because of my sweat and my diligence and my hard work. Well, and God gave me a brain that I didn't have until he gave it to me, because he gave me a body and he put a brain in it, fortunately. So you see the point? I don't have anything unless I recognize this is what he's given me. It is an interesting balance that God has designed, that he would give us the abilities, give us the intelligence, give us the strength, and give us the resources to get us started and keep us going. But he also says to us, now use it. Now I've given you this ability, given you this position, put you in this place. Use it according to his purposes. Because if we don't get this settled, because we start really clearly, obviously, we start with what he gave us. We can see it in a sense of placement within the course of human history. You didn't fill out the form. You didn't exist previously. You weren't in some council of the heavenlies suggesting that you could come around 2012 and kind of mature at 2015. I don't know. You didn't get to fill out that form, right? Did your parents ever tell you about it? They didn't fill it out either. Because God just designed in the course of human history that we would be in this moment, in this time, and in this place, and with these abilities. It's what he gave us. Many men have ignored this and become self-reliant, self-supporting, and eventually they end up in verse 17, sorrowful, sick of themselves, and quite honestly, angry. What's going to happen if I invest into my ideas, realizing it's my hard work and my diligence and my determination that's got me here, and look at the business I built, and look what I've done in this family, and look at who I am, and I wake up one day and realize it's not me. It's what God is doing in me and allowing me to do. Some people deny that God did it. They get angry and become self-reliant and very destructive. First thing I would suggest, if you're going to enjoy what you have, or to do it, just know where it came from. The second aspect would be live within your means. He says here twice in these verses, this is your heritage, your portion. This is your lot. This is your place. And so because that's what God has provided, live within your means. You know, and think this so you guys don't think I'm racist or something. Okay, so I'll look at Chuck on this one. So now you all know I'm racist. So so there's this black Southern preacher. Is that politically correct? Say black. Okay, Chuck's gonna let me go. He's not gonna pummel me after service, so we're good. So there's this black Southern preacher full of energy and just, you know, he's got it. And I had this told to me 2 decades ago. This is what he said. Be who you is. Because if you ain't who you is who you ain't. Now think about that. Be who you is, because if you ain't who you is who you ain't. Now I say that because I get animated when I just hear this guy, boom, pounding it. It's so true. You can't be someone else. You can live your life and enjoy your life if you're willing to say, this is my life. This is who I am. This is my lot. This is my portion. I'm not going to cry about it. I'm not going to whine about it. I'm going to say, Lord, just show me who that is inside of this body. Who is it? And let me live within my means. He says, it's joyful to know your portion, your heritage. Live within it. It's okay. I look at it this way. I want to learn from others. That's biblical. But I don't want to try to be them. And I don't want to try to beat them. I don't have to outperform them. I don't have to keep up with them. I can be encouraged, even inspired by them. But if I'm going to have any joy, any sense of hope, I am going to have to hold on to what God has made me to be. I have a, you know, kind of this mindset, a little bit of Popeye theology. I am what I am. I am what I am, I guess I should say. But God's not done yet. And so I know he's going to finish this work. Okay, God, finish what you started. This is who I am. So live within your means. Know who you are and be a good steward in that area. Third thing I would suggest to you that's relevant if we're going to do this, it says in verse 19 that we're to rejoice in his labor. This is the gift of God. So first of all, think of this. It's a gift of God. So when you got a gift on your birthday, when someone presented you a present on Christmas, what'd you do with it? Some of you ladies, you delayed because you studied the cute wrapping and you liked the bow and you thought it was so cute how they put your name with the curly Q and the sweet. Oh, guys, I don't met too many like that. We're R&T, man. Rip and tear. I want to see what's inside. What is in there? Because I'm not here to study the packaging. I want to get to what the contents, because it's a gift. It's been presented. I want to take hold of it. And then when I figure out what it is, like, wow, you know, I may put it on a mantle to observe it, to think about it. I may fire it up and use it, whatever it is, because it's to be used. It's a gift. Look at what he says about this gift. What is this gift? Rejoice in his labor. Your labor. Rejoice in your labor. That's not possible, right? How many people say, woo, Monday, I get to go to work. or actually how many people come home on Monday and say, wow, well, it's a great day in work. Let me read you this. Okay, guys, think about this. Think about what we present. The common countenance among men is the face of drudgery. Weary words speaking of futility, frustration, and emptiness. Lowered shoulders tired from daily tasks and attempts. Blank eyes dulled by perseverance without purpose. Is it any wonder that the next generation doesn't want to work like their predecessors? Did you get that? Guys that can be so gloom and so bummed out and so negative, and they can't figure out why the kids don't want to work and be like them. Got an idea? You're a bummer to be around. You convey that work is horrible. So don't be surprised when they say, you know what, I'm going to try something different, like welfare. I'm going to try something that just doesn't require too much because I want to be like you. See, it's so important that we just stop and go, what's the purpose again? How can I rejoice in labor? Many, I would suggest, and I would just draw off my own experience, there's more than once that I've forgotten what the objective, what the goal, what the purpose is in regards to work. And when I forget that, and I started getting more focused on my reputation as a painter in the Northwest, and people were telling me, well, yeah, I know you did this, and coming in from other states and requesting that I would paint their semi. And I get to thinking, man, that's all it's about. And I started really, not consciously, not intentionally, but in reality, becoming more connected with my reputation in the workplace than realizing what the workplace was for. The workplace was to accomplish something I needed. In other words, I went there, I got paid for doing the work they told me to do, and I come home and I could make the mortgage payment. I could buy food and we could hang out as a family and life was enjoyable. The job had a purpose, a goal, and it actually had to be thought through by me, although it was ingrained culturally. You just go to work and you pay your bills. The point is, the intention is, the objective is, I got to think this through. Why am I working? Why am I doing this? Every guy should ask themselves that question right now. Why am I doing this? And then as you ask yourself, okay, so I'm doing it. Is it getting me where I need to be? Is it taking me to my objective, my goal? And don't be spontaneous and say, okay, I'm going to quit and get another job. You really got to be patient, but you got to be saying, okay, what's my purpose? It changes everything. When we embrace our purpose in the workplace, men and women, then it changes the way we approach it. It changes the way we present it. It changes the way we deal with it. It changes whether or not we can rejoice in it. According to verse 10, silver in abundance will not satisfy. We put that together with 1 Timothy chapter 6, verse 10, where it says that this love of money is a root of all kinds of evil, which some have strayed in the faith. So in other words, some pursued these things that are a result of wanting too much silver in abundance, and they've strayed in their faith. The end result, that verse goes on to tell us, that as they strayed off track, they've pierced themselves through with many sorrows because they've wandered off track. I've got off course with my goal was this, but now I'm going for this and I'm a little edgy around the home front and I'm always gone and I'm focused on getting this and I got to have this. And I've pierced myself through with many sorrows. Perhaps I need to back up. Maybe I need to sort out what is the purpose? What is the goal? You know, Jesus said something I believe applies in this area of our lives. He said it several times, so I think when he repeats himself, there's a point to it. He who has ears to hear, let him hear. So obviously he's conveying that you may have ears, but you may not be using them to hear. He who has ears to hear, let him hear. What is God saying to you? What is the Spirit saying to his people? What is he mentioning to you? Let's go back to verse 1. When you come into the house of God, draw near to hear rather than to do. Draw near to hear. What is God teaching you? What is God speaking to you? What is God bringing up in the stillness of my heart when I sit down and seek him? What is his preferred agenda? His topic of choice? What's he saying? Do we know that? Because see, I know that there's times I would rather have someone tell me. I would rather go to a seminar. I'd rather go to a conference. I'd rather sit in a service and have somebody say, do this, 1, 2, 3, and ABC, and you'll have a good life and you'll rejoice in your labor. I love that. I wish it would happen that way. But the problem is they're not me. And their principles could be true and they could be have application in my life, but the emphasis God may have is different. And the only way I can know what God's telling me is to seek him. We're told in Ephesians 5:17, do not be unwise, but understand what the will of the Lord is. And so for all of us, home, taking care of children, in between occupation, various different statuses and stages, we've got to say, God, what are you speaking to me? What do you want to how are you going to build me up? You have given me this life. You have provided. And what is your purpose? Help me to set my goals, my objectives, my agendas. Help me to dial in why I do what I do, this purpose, based on what you're telling me, based on what you're showing me. Read Hebrews 11, where you see that dynamic of faith brought into real people's lives. Where in things that were confusing and it didn't matter, but there was a tenacity, a focus, a sense of, I know I'm to do this because I know God's prompting me to this. People will not always support you. They will be often critical of you. You shouldn't do that. That's not a good move for your family. That's not smart. But you know, you want to know what God has to say. Did we come here today to hear what God has to say? Or did we come in today just because we go to church on Sundays? Just because we do that? Because that's what we do. See, it's so important that we recognize the very God of creation presides within us, resides within us, is resident within us. And he loves us. And he wants to direct us and to speak to us. And so when we come in, I think it's just appropriate. Lord, what do you want to say to me? But if you've ever had children or you ever worked with people and you had to give them instruction and direction, when you receive instruction, there's going to be an action. God, what do you want me to do? I want you to let go of that. I want you to reschedule that. I want you to do that. And I'm not going to tell you how to do it because I don't know what to do. I got to figure me out. That's, you guys think you have a job. I got to figure this one out. But God will speak to you and he'll mention in your very heart of hearts, this is the issue. But will you do it? That's the dilemma. My observation, it may be a little too much like Solomon. My observation historically is most men won't. Most men will continue to plod along doing things the way they want to do them, the way they think's the best way to do them. They'll just keep doing it. And they'll spend very little time where it says in Psalm 46:10, to be still and know that he is God. And I speak of my own experience. I speak of my own regret, quite honestly, in my life, where there's just been times I've just done it because it needs to be done instead of stopping and going, God, what do you want me to do? When I've stopped and I've understood what I'm to do, I'm experiencing Ecclesiastes 5:20. It makes sense to me in my brain. In the new century version, it says this. Speaking of those who have settled their life and understand this is what God has me to do, they do not worry about how short life is because God keeps them busy with what they love to do. God keeps you, me, us busy with what we love to do because we recognize it's his work in and through us. It's not pastoral. It's not ministry. It's not coming into the church to find some work. It's going out into the world and living the way he called us to live and engaging and involving and being who he's called us to be and having joy in that and realizing, God, you placed me here at this season and this time for your purposes. And so, therefore, here I am. Let's stand. We'll close in prayer. God, as we would just consider the simplicity of your word, the beauty that we see on these pages, and yet, Lord, we rejoice more so in your presence. I rejoice, God, that you do not point things out to put us down, that you are not standing over us, finger-pointed, trying to get our attention. I rejoice in who you are, God. God of all grace, God of all hope, God of all provision. God, may we as a people, I speak for myself, I ask even more specifically for us as men, may we hear what you say and may we obey. Give us that strength to follow. But first, God, we need that sensitivity to hear. In the midst of our busyness and our quest to be good husbands, to be good parents, help us where we've wandered from our purpose. Thank you, God, that you are so good at getting us back on track, giving us energy, hope, life, and truth. To you be the glory, both now and forever. Amen.